and welcome to Adrian Has Issues. Today I'm speaking with, well, today is going to be really fun. Like, this all kind of got set up very quickly. A lot of my guests I try to talk to and correspond with at least a couple of weeks in advance, but there's just, every so often, like, I'll find somebody online that I'm like, okay, I need to have them on. I don't even know if the answer is going to be no. I figured, who can say no to me, right? Today, I have the writer of the really, really awesome comic book Flat Track Furies. I don't want to give it all away, but there's roller derby, there's monsters, there's ass-kicking, and I just picked this book up. It got sent to my house. This is the end of last week. Two pages in, I needed to have the writer and creator, and I just need to have her on a show because it's amazing. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Mariah Hummer. Mariah, how you doing?
I'm excellent, especially after that intro. That was a pretty...
Yeah, I got really... it was weird because that's exactly how it happened. Like, I think I might have even, like, sent you, like, a message on Twitter shortly after the book arrived in the mail where I read the first two pages. And I think, where was it around the fact that one of the characters was named Mina Fey?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sold. I'm already with this book. And I'm like, I need to have you on the show. I haven't even finished this book. I don't even know how it's going to end. But all I know is people need to know about this. So, gosh, where do you even start?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun doing it. It's my very first comic book. So I feel like there's a lot of things that I learned that I won't do next time or that, you know, I will do next time just because, you know, going through the whole process, you definitely, you know, go through a lot of... you know, mishaps, and you make a lot of mistakes. So I'm really excited about this first one. And yes, there is a skater on the opposing team named Mina Fey. Tina Fey is like one of my idols, so I had to put her in there somewhere.
So I guess we should probably start dancing around it, but I'll let you give like a nice little synopsis of what this book is about, because otherwise I'm going to just keep gushing about
it. Okay. So essentially the comic book is about a team of roller derby ladies. All of my characters are women, so it's about four roller derby players, and then we add a fifth at the end. And yeah, essentially they protect their town from weird monsters or kind of supernatural occurrences that keep happening. Their town is called Nuclear City, so that kind of gives you an idea of what kind of mayhem ensues. And yeah, it's really fun. All of their personalities are really different, but they find that, you know, they can work together and grow together to, you know, just get closer and protect their town and play some derby while they're at it. Yeah, so I kind of like to compare it to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles a lot, you know, but specifically catered towards a female audience or with female characters. It's just a lot of fun, and you know, it's kind of like an all ages type of comic book.
Yeah, it was just really cool because how I found you out, I can't even remember who originally had retweeted your link when it was available, but it's just that, and I'm like, okay, roller derby check, monsters check, and it's like, all right, this just sounds fantastic. So obviously you come from a roller derby background yourself. Do you still currently play, or is this...
Yeah, no, I absolutely play. I've played for about like 3.5-4 years. So yeah, I'm playing derby all the time. And I actually think that that's the reason why the comic book took so long to do, is because derby takes up a lot of time. You know, we have practice like 2 or 3 times a week, and sometimes we bout on Saturdays. And so like my Monday evenings and my Thursday evenings are like completely full. You know, I can't like do anything because I'm doing roller derby. But yeah, it's really fun. It's really challenging. I got into it because my husband went to high school with this girl whose roller derby name is Amy Armalite, and she invited us to her first bout. And I went, and we just fell in love with it. I just remember seeing like all of these badass chicks just being amazing on the track. I was like, I could never do that. And they were like, we'll teach you how to skate. Like, we'll teach you how to do it. Just come. And so once my work schedule kind of cleared up a little bit, I started, and I haven't looked back.
That's actually something you just touched on. I think it's pretty fascinating where they're like, we'll teach you how to skate, and they'll just kind of just bring you on. And that's something I think you actually sort of mentioned in the book itself. And that's kind of a really cool scene because you think about most sports, you know, being someone from the outside looking in, you know, you have to go through all these crazy hoops to kind of maybe play yourself, but to just have them be like, yeah, come on, we'll, you know, we'll teach you how to skate and we'll, you know, show you the rules. That's a really cool thing that you don't see a lot very often.
Yeah, absolutely. It's roller derby definitely lends itself to women that have never played a sport before, which is why it's, you know, it's something that women just love to do, is because, you know, if we haven't ever played a sport, then, you know, let's say we try to go to, you know, the intramural soccer team, or, you know, kind of try to do a pickup game at some point or another, we just kind of feel embarrassed and foolish because, you know, our bodies are not used to it. We're not good at the sport. And I think that hinders a lot of women from doing sports or being athletic. You know, once they get older, they kind of feel like they missed their shot. But with roller derby, it was like, yeah, you know, we'll come, you don't have to know how to skate. We'll train you how to skate. Usually that takes about 6 months to get through, you know, just regular skating skills, like start and stop.
Right.
And then you move on to derby skills. And then after, you know, 6 to 8 months, you start bouting, and it's just, I don't know, you kind of come in and it's like a sisterhood, and, you know, everybody's rooting for you and helping you out. So it's definitely something that I would encourage, any woman to try out, especially if you haven't played sports before.
That's really cool, because I know that we have one out here in Jersey whom I know they used to advertise a lot on the Roller Girls, the Garden State Roller Girls, and I just was one of the things that, unfortunately, I know very little about actually how the game is necessarily played. I know there was actually a TV show where I know they did like a televised roller derby show, but I guess I can kind of give like a crash course of exactly how the game is played, because, well,
yeah, I mean,
people like me who are a little illiterate.
Absolutely. I think we actually had one of the ladies from Garden State Roller Girls. Her name was Jersey Justice, and she moved to Colorado, so we got to skate with her for a while, and she's fantastic. She plays with the Denver team now, but yeah, essentially roller derby consists of two teams. On the track, you have 5 people from each team. So each team has 4 blockers and they have 1 jammer. The 4 blockers, well, I guess the 8 blockers, together they make up the pack. And the pack is actually the only time that you can engage. You can engage like 10 feet behind the pack or 10 feet in front of the pack, but you can essentially only do hitting while you're inside that pack situation. You have the 2 jammers. You have 1 jammer from each team. And the jammer's only job is to score points. So when the jam whistle starts, essentially what they do is they make their first pass. So you have, you know, 4 people trying to get you through the pack. You have 4 people trying to just annihilate you. And the first pass just determines who the lead jammer is. So if you make it out of the pack first, your lead jammer, the only thing that does is it means that you can call off the jam at any point in time, but you want that, you know, cause you can kind of control, the jam a little bit more. And then every pass after that, for every opposing member that you pass, like their hips, you get 1 point. So yeah, essentially you just have people, you know, just trying to block the bejesus out of you. And then, you know, you also have like your teammates trying to help you out and stuff. So yeah, essentially that's how you score points. Jammers are usually like a lot faster and, you know, they juke around and they're really jumpy because they want to score those points. And, blockers, I mean, everybody really comes in all shapes and sizes. You know, if you're a blocker, you just kind of have to be sturdy on your skates. But yeah, it's really cool. We've kind of hit a point in derby where people are doing crazy stuff, like they're skating backwards on the track to avoid certain things, and yeah, it's kind of nuts now. But yeah, it's gonna be even more nuts when all the junior derby girls grow up and like take all of our spots, because they're just gonna be incredible. But yeah, that's how derby is played. Usually like a point spread, if it's like 2 pretty pretty even teams, the point spread will be between, you know, like 120, 150 points each. Just because, you know, you get a point for every hip that you pass in that jam. And a jam is only 2 minutes long if the jammer doesn't exactly call it off beforehand. So yeah, it's kind of hard to explain over audio. Usually when people ask me how to explain it, I like draw little pictures for them, and I'm like, this happens. So they have like a little sheet they have at the end. I'm like, okay, now study the sheet that I gave you, and you can come watch a derby and enjoy it. But yeah, it's really fun. It's really hard. Actually, just last night we had practice, and I think I like rolled my ankle pretty bad. So I might not skate on Thursday, or I might feel fine by Thursday. But yeah, it's definitely full contact.
Yeah, because I mean, I have seen, you know, some footage of roller derby, and it's not that surprisingly physical, but it's still kind of astounding just how hard, you know, some of the hitting can be. Like, for as times, it almost feels like you're actually just watching hockey minus the sticks.
Yeah, especially because you have that centrifugal force of the track. I mean, the track is an oval. And so, I mean, when you come from, like, the inside of the track to the outside, you can really get a lot of momentum. You can absolutely hurt somebody. You know, I mean, there's certain things that aren't legal. Like, you can't, you know, you can't, like, punch somebody or, like, use your elbows. We usually get a lot of that where people are like, yeah, you're going to punch somebody in the face, right? And I'm like, no, what?
Like, why? That's the worst. Well, no. Yeah, like, get out of here, psycho.
I'm not a horrible person. Yeah, no, it's, I think a lot of people are used to the old roller derby of, like, the 70s, or there is that bank track. Like, I don't know if you've seen Whip It, but it's like that curved track. When they resurrected derby in 2001 in Austin, Texas, it was a little bit more like fighty. Like, they would get into little fights, and it was like a little bit more. It was a little bit more like roller derby and wrestling together. But it's since kind of moved off of that into you know, a really athletic sport. So yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if necessarily needs to be that free-for-all where people are quite literally punching each other in the face, so I guess it's a little more accessible that way.
Yeah, I don't know if I would play the get in fights. I don't know. I feel like there kind of has to be at least a little bit of, you know, athleticism going on and, you know, rules, I guess. So, yeah.
So, given your background with roller derby, at what point, I guess, did you decide, well, you know what? I enjoyed it so much. Like, I want to write a comic book about this.
Well, I definitely wanted to do a comic. Like, I've definitely wanted to draw comics for a long time. But I wasn't really sure, like, what story to do. And, I don't know. I just kind of felt like I need to just write something, and I need to get it out there and just, like, get through all the hard stuff, you know? My husband and I don't even remember, like, who thought of the idea or, like, when we thought of it. It's just, I can't even, like, pinpoint the origin of it. We just thought of, you know, the Furies, and, you know, it just kind of took off from there. You know, we just started, So I probably came up with all of the characters. But Paul definitely helps me write it and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I wrote the first issue, and, it took me so long because I drew all of it, and then I hated it and redrew the entire thing. And that is like a no-no. Don't ever do that. I mean, don't put out something you hate, but just like draw it right the first time. Okay. And then, you know, I'd go through periods of time where, like, I wouldn't work on it because I was like, I don't know what I want to do with these inks. Like, I don't know what I want to do with the color. And I would just kind of, like, mull it over for a long time. Or, like, you know, work would take over or roller derby would take over. So this one definitely took me a long time. I'm hoping the second one, though, will take me, like, you know, 4 or 5 months or something.
Which, speaking of which, the color scheme on this is fantastic, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
It's really cool because I'm like, obviously the color, you know, a lot of grays, a lot of pinks, but it's just something that just makes it very just, that makes it pop, you know what I mean? As opposed to just using full color or going black and white. Like, that minimal use of color, I don't know, I think it just really, really makes the book pop. So, I mean, to see that you mold over the color so well, and it's like, you know what, it was well worth the struggle, at least on my end.
Thank you. Yeah, that's good to hear, especially because I think I chose the black, I think I chose not doing a full color scheme because I'm just bad at coloring. And I was like, what am
I? As someone who took forever to color inside the lines as a kid, don't worry, I feel your pain.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I don't know how to make it look, you know, super professional. You know, like, like you see the new Superman and the new Batman, and you're just like, how did they get these amazing colors? Like, how do you computer? Like, how do you do that? but I was just like, you know what? Like, let's just make it simple. You know, like, don't make it overly complicated. Don't sweat it. I specifically chose the grayscale and the pink because black and pink is kind of like a nod to like the 2001 like old school way of derby. So derby is kind of changing. It kind of started with the bank track, and then it moved to flat track because bank tracks are like super expensive and they're like, you know, just super difficult to maintain and you can't do anything else on it. So they moved to flat track roller derby. And it was definitely like chick power, awesome, like black and hot pink, let's do this. And now it's kind of moved towards being a little bit more athletic and more of an actual sport. I think roller derby is trying to be recognized as a sport rather than like a punch girls in the face thing. And so they've moved kind of away from like the black and pink type of colors, and they're moving more towards athletic colors. I mean, I don't necessarily think that that's good or bad. I think they're just trying to put off a different persona now, you know, rather than...
Well, that's kind of interesting, though, because I guess it's one thing, I don't know, do you see, because I know you said you didn't feel one way or the other about it, where I could definitely see where making it more of an athletic, I guess, very base colors, I guess to the outsider, may make it look like it's more professional, but I don't know. Part of me kind of wishes that's kind of wasn't the case, where it can kind of keep some of, you know, the interesting color schemes, because to me, I think that's kind of what makes it more interesting than, let's say, like, you know, let's say a football or even like a soccer uniform.
Yeah, I think so too. I definitely find uniforms that are more catered towards being athletic to be just like a little bit less fun. But I think the balance with it is that, like, your travel team, so, like, you know, most leagues have two teams. You know, they have, like, their home teams, which is, like, our parents in the town. Like, they all come watch us. And that's more like your fishnets and booty shorts kind of thing. And then the travel team is, like, the team, it's, like, your best players, and that's what you're doing to play for rank. Like, you want to be ranked higher than the other teams. So it's, like, sanctioned bouts. You know, it's a bigger deal. And most people, like, don't come to those as often because usually you do it in tournaments. Because there are, like, 200 leagues in the U.S., like, we don't have...
Holy crap,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, like, actually, I think there are 300 now. But, yeah, there's quite a bit. And so... you have to play like about each quarter. And what a lot of people do to kind of make their ranking a little bit more solid is they'll go to a tournament and they'll play like three bouts in a weekend. And then they'll do that the next quarter and then the next quarter. So, you know, like your travel team is a little bit more professional because you don't really have the kind of crowd that you do for like a home bout.
It makes a little bit more sense now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely interesting to kind of see the two schools of thought. Like we have roller derby names, and so mine is the original Skankster. I know, right? I know.
That is actually pretty badass.
But a lot of teams for their WFSTA sanctioned bouts. Sorry, WFSTA is the Women's Flat Track Derby Association. I should really think about what I'm saying. But for, like, the sanctioned bouts, a lot of people have been using their last names rather than the derby name because they kind of want to legitimize the sport a little bit more. And so it's just kind of like you have that fun, dramatic derby, and then you kind of have that more, like, athletic, serious derby. So we're definitely kind of playing with those two schools of thought, like, all the time.
So, as far as the comic book end of things, I guess, what were your influences? Like, at what point, I mean, I guess what we're saying is, the one thing I was, like, doing when talking to my guests is trying to figure out where, I guess, their love of comic books, or even, let's say, geek culture in general, like, where it all starts, because some of the stories can get pretty awesome. So, I guess, as a young Mariah, or maybe, you know, fairly recently, like, where did your love of comics come from?
You know, I actually don't even remember the first comic I picked up, which is too bad. But I mean, I read my first comic maybe when I was like 22 or something, or 21. Like, not when I was, you know, like 8 years old or 10 years old. I'd always kind of want, like, I'd always kind of doodled in high school and that kind of thing. But I was actually like a choir nerd, and I was like, I'm going to study opera and be like an amazing opera singer. And I did study opera, and it was awesome. But I just found that it wasn't actually what I wanted to do for a living. No. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And I had, you know, like my huge, you know, crisis of like, what do I change my major to? Like, where is my life going? Who am I? You know, as one does when they're young.
I think everybody has one of those. I mean, at some point in their life, even, you know, even if they're older or not.
I think you're honestly just kind of reconciling like your kid self with your adult self. And you're also like reconciling what your parents have kind of like expected you to do or encouraged you to do. And that's kind of like your wake up call of, no, really, who am I? I can choose. Like, I can choose whoever I want to be, whatever I want to do, you know, and that's kind of like everybody's, you know, I guess, come to adulthood. But I ended up changing my major to art while I was at the University of Northern Colorado, but I still wasn't sure what I wanted to do with it. I was like, do I want to do graphic design? You know, do I want to do illustration? You know, like, what am I going to do? Then I married my husband, and I was like, hey, I still don't know what I want to do. So I'm just like, not going to go to school. I'm just going to work and, you know, just kind of figure it out in the meantime. And he was like, okay, cool. Whenever you want to go back to school, like, you know, you can go back. And so I went back when I was like 25, and, I majored in studio drawing, and I was like, yeah, I want to do comic books for a living. So yeah, in between when I was like 21 and 25, that's when I decided like, yeah, okay, comic books. That's it. That's what I'm doing. And like, I totally fell in love with it. I love that it's a sequential art form, because I've always kind of created art that tells a story. It may not have been sequential, but like whenever I would make a piece, like I would formulate the story in my mind of like what I wanted it to say and like what I wanted people to grab from it. So I kind of started doing it in my head already. So I went back to CSU and I did studio drawing. It was actually kind of tough because all of my art professors like were not into comic books.
Wait, how is that even possible? Like, don't tell me they're like those stuffy suit types who have yet to reconcile the fact that comic books can actually be a very serious medium.
You know, it was kind of like, this is a fine art study, and like we don't do commercial things here, or like this low form of like illustration. It was totally crazy, and I was like, cool. Well, I'm still gonna get my degree, so.
He's like, well, first off, go screw yourself. Second of all,
you're my teacher. Deal with it. And I had a lot of push from my professors to do more fine art, and it just wasn't what I wanted to do. I remember one of my art teachers got like a little snarky with me one day, and because I was like, hey, I'd really like some feedback. You know, like this is what I'm doing this next 6 weeks. Like, this is my project. You know, and you like present it and, you know, do all that stuff. And I was like, hey, I'd really like some feedback. And he was like, well, I don't know if I really have any feedback for you because I don't really know anything about comic books. And I was like, cool. Well, maybe you should pick one up because you're an art teacher and this is your job. Like, it was just kind of like frustrating. Like, it's a form of art. Like, why don't you educate yourself on it? Like, I'm sure a lot of the knowledge that you already have will correlate. So like, why don't you just become a little familiar? I'll bring a comic book for you. You know, it was kind of weird.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I guess they're all set in their ways. And I know even recently, a lot of people still have yet to realize that comic books aren't just about, you know, capes and tights and that kind of thing, where every so often when a comic book gets, I guess, maybe push a little bit more into the mainstream and realize it's not that. It's always like this big sort of affair where they're like, oh man, I didn't realize comic books like this existed. It's like, yeah, well, you never took time to look.
Yeah, and even so, even if comic books are just about capes and tights, like comic books, graphic novels, and all other forms of art, they reflect us. Like, they reflect our lives. Like, they reflect our reality. So even when you read a story about Superman, I mean, it's still reflective of us as a society. So why wouldn't you think that that's valuable? Why wouldn't you think that that's art?
I know some people are just, I don't know, it's just very weird. And I don't know if it's maybe they're just traditionalists where, of course, you know, years ago, no one ever thought that this would ever kind of hold any weight, which is strange because even early days of comics, clearly they were pretty, I would say serious business in the sense of, I mean, a lot of the stories they told reflected the times in and of themselves, much like, you know, Captain America punching out Hitler or, you know, Wonder Woman fighting Nazis or what have you. So clearly, this medium had, you know, obviously its basis in pop culture, or at least in history in and of itself. So I don't know why that got changed at some point. It's very baffling, and it's kind of sad that there's still that mentality.
Yeah, and it's definitely morphed over time. I mean, it kind of started as more of like a patriotic, I don't want to say propaganda, but like that.
In
that
a way, it kind of is.
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely changed over time, but, my dad is kind of like that, where, I told him that I wanted to do, you know, comic books for a living, you know, a few years ago. And he was like, oh, like in the paper, how awesome. and there's nothing wrong with comics in the paper, but it does kind of point to, kind of like that old school way of thinking where like, people still read the paper. Like, you can kind of tell my dad's age just by, you know, that comment, because, like, nobody really reads the paper anymore. We definitely can, but we normally just read articles, you know, online. And so, like, the online paper doesn't have, like, the comic book section.
Oh, you mean you don't, like, you know, like, use your scroll wheel and just frantically scroll down to find the latest strip of Get Fuzzy?
Get Fuzzy. No, I don't. Maybe I'm missing out.
Oh, then you're clearly doing life wrong. Then.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you see yourself then, I guess, expanding or to other comics or other, like, maybe working with somebody else? Or are you pretty content with just, I guess, working with Flat Track Furies for a while?
You know, I'm really excited to work on Flat Track Furies for a while. I don't think one issue, like, makes you, like, a... like an established artist in that story. I definitely set it up so that I could do multiple issues of it. Honestly, I really want this to kind of be a comic that women can really grab and really sink their teeth into. With Flat Track Furies, like, I specifically made all my characters female because I wanted women to pick it up and be like, oh my gosh, great, a comic just for me. You know, like a comic just for me. And I wanted to teach them that, you know, their voices and their stories are important. I went to a recent con, and it was like the first con I've ever done. It was super cool. And I had like my pink and black table, and, you know, nobody else had like as much pink as I did at all. And my husband said that he kind of saw some, like, hardcore comic guys, like, walk by and kind of, like, scoff at it a little bit. Like, ugh, you know, like, pink, what is this pink garbage here? I didn't notice it because I was too busy, you know, being completely excited.
Well, that's probably the better course of action, so that way you didn't, you know, try to, like, level these idiots for, you know, sneering at your work.
I mean, I assume that some people will sneer at it just because it, like, isn't their thing. And that's okay. You know, like, that's... I mean, I'm not going to be, like, offended. I'll probably go home and, like, cry about it that somebody didn't like it.
Aww.
But, you know, I'm not going to be like, how dare you? You know, like, there's art, you know, out there that I, you know, that just isn't my jam. But I definitely found that a lot of women would, like, look around, see my table, and then come to my table. And I think it's because... you know, instead of having to fight to be accepted into being interested. That sounded like a really weird sentence, but bear with me. Instead of having to, like, fight to be accepted, to be interested in, like, you know, X-Men or Superman or Batman or, you know, any of, like, the big stories out there, like The Flash, they felt like there was a comic that they could just go up and just grab, and it was, like, for them. It was like, oh, cool, like, the women's section of this Comic-Con, you know, like, they could go in and just, like, totally feel accepted at this table and just be like, yes, give that to me, like, I know I'm gonna like that. And so that was really cool to see, and I saw, like, a lot of young girls really like it. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about having a comic that will empower women and will be kind of a specific part of the comic book industry where women feel like it's specifically catered towards them, instead of like, oh, there's a female Thor now, or, you know, there's a female, and there's like a Muslim Miss Marvel. You know, it's like they, instead of changing characters in order to cater to women, it's like this character was specifically created for you.
Right, and there's something to be said about that, because unfortunately growing up, I mean, obviously you had, you know, the Falcon or Black Panther, but even just in speaking, there aren't too many, as far as I'm talking like majors, mind you, which, I mean, I'm sure I'll probably have someone tweet and debunk this, but feel free to. But, you know, there weren't too many, you know, black superheroes that you can really say that, you know, I was able to kind of look at and say, hey, you know, these guys are pretty cool. And occasionally when they were done, it was done in a way where it was almost a little pandering, I hate to say. I mean, thankfully it's gone since then, but I understand, I kind of get what you're saying as far as, yes, you have, you know, superheroes, like you said, your Ms. Marvel or Thor, who are female. But to actually pick up a book and say, hey, you know what? This is something like that reflects, you know, me in some way. And that's kind of what drew me to your book, which, again, I'm like, I'm not female, nor do I, you know, play roller derby. But you get that vibe that obviously this was made with a specific, I hate to use the word agenda, because unfortunately it always seems like it's a little, the connotation gets very weird on that, but you know what I mean? But it has a specific, I guess, purpose.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with the message on front, I'm like, you know what? Badass. Rock on. Because I don't think you get a lot of that. And thankfully, I think what's happening now is we're starting to see that shift towards people who are now willing to, I guess, access or find, hopefully find access to comics that, I guess, reflect more of their personalities and what have you. And while there is that unfortunate shift where, I guess, people who normally would read this thing are feeling like, you know, all of a sudden their clubhouse is being shaken down. But it's like, you know what, let's just open these doors. Let's just bring everybody in, because that's really what it's all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the comic industry has definitely been really exclusive. And now it's becoming more inclusive, which is really nice. But you do definitely have a lot of people that that, you know, feel as if like something is being taken away from them, and so they're like punching down. You know, they like don't want, you know, people to come and invade their special place. I kind of think that for a while, you know, like liking comic books and you know, participating in that world, like it really was considered like nerdy and geeky. And I think a lot of people who were like social outcasts really, really were drawn to comics. And so I think that now it's changing, obviously, you know, because we have, you know, these major motion pictures, people are really starting to like comic books that have never liked comic books before. And I think these people that have been involved with comics for so long, you know, kind of feel like, oh, well, I was here first. And, you know, like you don't get to talk about how much of a fan you are, you know, because I've been around here for longer. And so I get why they feel that way. But if they felt excluded, like in any part of their life, then they should understand why it's so important to be inclusive to anybody coming in. You know what I mean? Like they should understand that being accepting of other people who are excited about the same things that they're excited about is really, really important. So yeah, it definitely is changing. I think we are seeing the industry, and I think the fans will follow, but we are seeing the industry. So last week, you know, they have the Joker variant cover.
Oh,
by
yeah.
Rafael Albuquerque. And, you know, it wasn't, I heard a lot of people debate about, you know, whether it did kind of allude to, you know, sexual abuse or something like that. And some people were like, no, it's fine. Like, why is everybody freaking out? But I found that a lot of women were like, wow, this cover made me really uncomfortable. And so Rafael Albuquerque, who is like a total class act, he's awesome, was like, hey, it made you uncomfortable. I'm really sorry. I'm going to pull it. And DC was like, yeah, let's pull it. Let's do the right thing. And so it, I mean, whether or not you could say that it alluded to that, like, the bottom line is that it made women uncomfortable, and they absolutely catered to that, which is fantastic. So the industry is absolutely changing, and I think the fans will change in time.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I guess this is it's a fantastic time, but I guess there's still a ways to go.
Yeah,
and especially as far as that issue goes, I guess it kind of teetered back and forth, because I definitely could see, you know, where there was an issue here, but I guess part of me was a little bummed, because I know he got a lot of hate for it, and I don't think he necessarily meant for it to be, I guess, out of spite, but I don't know. It's just the Joker is always such a weird thing when it comes to that, because me and my girlfriend had this whole discussion about, I guess, his relationship with Harley Quinn, and I'm like, you know what? Oof, this is, looking back, I'm like, wow, this is not very good. it was a little hard to, because we kind of even we were able to admit, I'm like, you know what? It's not surprising, because, I mean, that character obviously would be that despicable to do that, but I guess sometimes we kind of forgot, like, wow, he's not exactly the most upright villain, I guess you can say. I know that sounds like a weird complaint, but, yeah, it was definitely a strange time, but it at least highlighted the fact that there are certain things that, while may be unintentional, but I guess there are certain things that, unfortunately, or even fortunately, you know, bring up issues that maybe we should address. It was definitely, like I said, the image itself being controversial, but I guess it was the conversation it brought about in terms of, you know, what makes people, and especially in this case, women, uncomfortable in terms of, you know, art or things like that. So, yeah, there's definitely this turning point where you're starting to see more of, it's, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is it's going to be a rough couple of years in terms of, I guess, that weird struggle, like you're saying, between, you know, obviously exclusion versus inclusion. So hopefully at the end of all this, it'll come out where hopefully everybody can enjoy comics for what they are.
Yeah.
And I'm talking all different kinds, because believe me, there's some comics that I look at and I'll flip through and say, you know what, this is not for me, and I have to put it down. But I'm sure someone else will dig it, and as long as it's not anything overly hurtful, I'm like, you know what, I guess rock on, because I guess there's something for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, and there's definitely, I mean, you vote with your money in comics, right? So, I mean, you vote with your money.
Oh, yeah, do
you
I ever.
A lot of things. So, I mean, if nobody buys that comic, then that artist or that writer knows that, like, you know, maybe it did make somebody uncomfortable, or it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that the public wanted. So, I mean, I'm really hoping that Flat Track Fairies will do well, because it's about empowering women. My friend gave a copy to her son, Parker, and Parker is like, you know, 10 years old. And he okay. loved it. And at first he was like, why'd you give me this pink thing? Like, what is this? and then he read it and he was like, when are you coming out with the second one? So I'm really just hoping that people will, you know, get past the pink and, you know, pick up a copy. But it's definitely been really cool to get responses from young women and women, just about how much they liked it, or how much, you know, their teenage daughter liked it. It's been really cool.
Which, by the way, you won quote of the day. Obviously this will be posted a couple weeks from now, but they re-recorded. You had responded to one of my tweets about Rogue and the X-Men movie, and I'm still laughing about that.
Yeah.
Which, hold on, I gotta pull this up, because it's not gonna work without the, I had basically made I had basically tweeted saying that I kind of, you know, was hoping that maybe with all the characters, because I think it was recently Jennifer Lawrence just today announced that the next X-Men movie is going to be the last time she's playing Mystique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had tweeted saying it'd be best if Fox, you know, made an X-Men movie that didn't feature the same five characters since, like, you know, for the last 15 years. And your response was great. It would be great if they could make an X-Men movie where Rogue isn't a complete idiot.
Seriously. And they strip her of like all of her inner strength, I feel like. You know, Rogue is this character that struggles a lot, and she always ends up coming out on top because she's strong enough to do so. You know, she just has this tenacity, and I feel like with the Rogue that they created in X-Men, they were like, okay, well, we need a Rogue, and you know, she'll have like a few lines and like whatever. I don't know. She just. Like, she would have, I don't feel like she, the real Rogue, would have ever given up her powers, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, I, that was recently on TV. I think that was, the third X-Men would have happened. And it was an interesting plot line, which, of course, I've noticed in the last few X-Men movies that Rogue has featured, her plots get dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was an interesting story, because here you have a character who, unfortunately, cannot, you know, touch someone. I mean, direct skin contact without, you know, a lot of problems happening. So then, I can understand, especially being a young girl, or, you know, an adolescent, that could be very difficult. So, I mean, okay, and here in this movie, they're like, oh, well, we have this cure that can take away your mutant abilities. And you'd imagine that'd be a great storyline for a movie of having a character who would struggle with the concept of, okay, on this end, you know, I could maybe finally do the thing I always wanted to do, but at the risk of losing my, you know, mutant powers, which, in a way, obviously, like, well, most of the X-Men, you feel like there's at least a certain level of being a mutant.
Yeah, and I feel like she gets into situations a lot where, like, maybe she, like, she does view her powers as a curse, but, like, she always ends up doing the right thing.
Right, exactly.
Right, and, like, protecting people with those powers. So it's definitely something that she struggles with. But yeah, I just kind of feel like they made her like vanilla pudding. Like she had like none of her like Rogue tenacity, which was kind of too bad.
Yeah, none of the Southern Charm too, which is kind of, I know that's very nitpicky thing, though, but, and I don't know who I blame necessarily, because I mean, I try not to like, you know, throw stones at Anna Paquin, but I don't know whose idea was it to like, okay, we'll take one of the strongest characters in X-Men and we will kind of dilute her to like base level sentimentality. Like, oh, this is unfortunate.
Yeah, I feel like, but I feel like she doesn't even, she has these glimpses where she's like, yes, you know, I'm gonna do the right thing and save everyone, but honestly I feel like most of the time she just worries about her boyfriend, and like that's the plot that they gave Rogue in the movies, is like, but what about my boyfriend? I don't know.
I definitely had a real huge beef with a lot of the portrayal of the women in the X-Men movies. Especially Storm. That one was a killer for me. And again, I guess maybe my issue was I never was even considered Halle Berry for the role, but I figured here's a woman who, you know, reading the comics, like, you know, she was like, you know, a thief for a while. She was a goddess. You know, she had all these great things. And hell, she ran the Morlocks for a time being. And I just, for some reason, it's just, I feel like they never really did the character justice. Like I felt like a character who's normally, you know, demands your presence, very, very background.
Yeah, I mean, Storm was definitely compassionate in the movies. I think she was probably,
well, they got that part across.
But like, she'd come off like a warrior. You know, like Storm is just like, I don't know, like she walks in a room and it's like, get out of her way. And I didn't get that from the movies at all.
It's like, you know, she's very, you know, nurturing, you know, she will help you. But honestly, when it's time to throw down, she's a little scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, here's a woman who's ripped hearts out. Several times, actually.
Yeah, it's definitely a trade-off, because I'm sure there are a lot of moving parts, you know, in the movies. And, you know, we're finding that a lot with, you know, new movies that are coming out, is you can't really make everything perfect. But I think maybe the reason why they kind of went down that path with the first, I mean, the X-Men movie was like one of the first superhero movies to be made, right?
Right. Yeah, I think there was that. I know Blade was a couple years before that.
Yeah, Daredevil, which, but it was like, I mean, I just kind of think that maybe it was the first movie, like the really big Marvel one, I think. And so they were kind of like, you know, still trying to, I think they wanted to get the movie out rather than really take the time to make sure that it was, you know, really an X-Men movie. And I think now Marvel has kind of found its footing, you know, and how they, and how they make movies. And so I think if they were to, I'm really hoping that X-Men Apocalypse will be like really, really great. But yeah, I don't know if I've actually been all that impressed by the X-Men movies in general.
No, I look back at certain parts, like I'll always love dearly the White House scene, and I think that's the second X movie where Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah.
Because that pretty much, you know, it was classic Nightcrawler. He did the very thing that we all know and love him for. And I mean, obviously it's a movie, so there's liberties taken with the character, and that's fine. But as far as, you know, as far as power usage and just overall presence, it worked. But I guess my issue with the X-Men movies is, you, like you said, like, I understand why they did it when they made the first one, because obviously this is like the first big to do. They didn't really have, I guess, the confidence or the ability to do a lot of things that maybe they set out. But 15 years later, and there hasn't been very huge changes. Like, we're still kind of playing to that very first movie, which in a way hasn't aged very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely watched the most recent one and thought, like, really? Like, this is all we got? I don't know. It felt a little stale, I think, maybe.
A little bit.
Yeah, but of course I'm still going to watch every single one of them, you know.
Oh, you have to. It's just like, you know, we'd be morally remiss as comic book fans to not see these movies, even if you sit there and pick them apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I've definitely tried to be a little bit more forgiving, just because, I mean, Hollywood is an animal that, like, I don't know of. Like, I don't know what the process is. I don't know, like, what kind of data that they use in order to make sure that this will be something that everybody enjoys, you know? I don't know really what, I don't know what decisions the producers are making. So I've tried to be, you know, a little bit more forgiving about that kind of thing. But I think it's okay to enjoy something and also be critical of it, you know, at the same time.
Right, because then you have a character, say, like, you know, Black Widow in the Avenger movies versus Rogue, or even, let's say, Kitty Pryde, who, I will say, though, Ellen Page casting as Kitty Pryde is spot on.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
I just felt like they, with the exception of that one scene where she's being chased by, like, Juggernaut or somehow sending people back in time, never really had a whole lot to do. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I recently read the Death of Wolverine, and I really liked how they portrayed Kitty Pryde in that one. I mean, it really wasn't her, you know? It just looked like her. I mean, somebody was, like, possessing her body, but, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I hadn't read it, so I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean it's not her?
Okay, never mind, new topic. New question.
Oh, no. No, please. Oh, please. I'm going to read it anyway. I'm not huge on spoilers as far as that book goes anyway.
I mean, I was just going to say that, like, I really liked how they portrayed her. You know, I thought it was nice. I mean, she was really, you know, compassionate and wanted, like, the best for Logan. And, it was just good. Whatever. Okay. Blah, blah.
Oh, see, now I feel bad now. I should have remembered that I didn't read it. That's okay, because I, to tell you the truth, like, I don't know about you, where it lies for you, but me, I'm X-Men through and through. Like, years before I read any Avengers, X-Men were my thing. So, trust me. Like, I'll eventually get around to reading it, even if I know all the ins and outs.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah, I don't mind spoilers either, honestly. But, yeah, I haven't read as much X-Men as I would like to. I don't know. I kind of like a bunch of different things. I don't really like to get stuck in one saga, perhaps. I really like to just read a bunch of different stuff. I really love indie comics.
So, actually, what are you reading right now, just out of curiosity?
So, the comics, I picked up a comic when I was in Seattle. I was at the Pike Place Market, and, you know, there's, like, that comic book shop in there. And I picked it up. It's called Deadly Class, and it's by, it's just kind of, it's by Rick Remender, Wes Craig. And like, it's about pretty much like the offspring of like mafia heads and assassins. And these children all go to school together and like learn how to kill people. Yeah, it's like kind of intense and it's like really violent. So, I'm still kind of enjoying it though. And I kind of want to see, you know, just what happens with this guy. He's kind of like the outcast of all the outcasts. And, he definitely has like a mental block of some sort. I'm not sure he's all there, but he's the main character. And so like,
I was going to say, I don't think all of them are all there if you really want to get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, I think he might be, like, I don't want to say schizophrenic, but he definitely is, his thought process is, he's very paranoid. So yeah, I'm reading that one right now, and I'm liking it so far. One of my all-time favorite comics is actually The Umbrella Academy.
You know, that's a book I don't know why I kept putting it off, because I guess around the time when that book came out was roughly around the time when, you know, My Chemical Romance was huge, and you know, Gerard Way was like, you know, anything he did was just like, it was gold. But I had heard, like, it got like a lot of really good reviews and people kept talking about it, and I feel like such a jerk for not picking it up, but I hear it's fantastic.
You should feel like a jerk, because it is fantastic. Just kidding. No, it's just really cool. Gabriel Ba is the one that draws it, and I love the way that he draws. He draws so weird, and like, I just love it. I don't know, his forms are very like hard. He has very like hard type of bodies, if that makes any sense. Like, they're kind of pointy, but I like it. And yeah, it's actually just kind of like a beautiful story. It's really like cute and grown up at the same time, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I love The Walking Dead, because it's The Walking Dead. And I really like Lock and Key. I haven't read the most recent. I definitely like Lock and Key. And I think my all-time most favorite like saga is American Vampire.
I read a few issues of that like when it started. That was a lot of fun.
It's awesome. It kind of like sucks because like I'm just a huge fan of Raphael Albuquerque's art, and so every once in a while they'll come out with an issue that has like six different artists in it, and I don't like any of them as much as I like him. So yeah, I just get like really bummed out because I'm like, oh man, I thought it was gonna be like, you know, 100 pages of pure Raphael Albuquerque bliss, and then it isn't, and that kind of bums me out. But I love the story that they started with it. I love where they go with it. I love how each book is kind of like a new decade, but they also go back in time to tell stories, and it's fantastic. I think it's probably one of the most well-done series. But I just, you know, wish that he drew the whole thing. He's like really busy though.
I'm sure. I was gonna say, and poor guy, like, especially like lately, I'm sure he's probably had like a lot on his plate with everything going on.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean,
which I hope blows over for him, because again, like, he's a really awesome artist, and I hope, because I know there are some people, and I hate to bring it back up, though, I know there are some people who are like sending him threats and all this.
Are you
stuff,
serious? It's like,
yeah, I don't know how much of it he received, though, but there was, at least I did hear there were some people who kind of took the criticism a little too far, which has a tendency to happen. Sadly, it's the internet, so it's almost expected now.
I thought that he had tweeted, like, just to be sure, I didn't, like, just to make it clear, I didn't receive any threats, but I, like, don't know anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just weird, because I don't know who to believe and who not to believe. But, I mean, if he's saying he hasn't received them, then obviously it's like he would have no reason to lie about that sort of
thing. Oh, my gosh, he's off Twitter now.
Is he? Oh, real?
I don't see him on Twitter. I'm, like, searching for him. Yeah, I'm not seeing it. That sucks, because, like, I think as an artist, you should be able to, I mean, like, he did the responsible thing. He was like, oh, crap, I didn't know it would make you uncomfortable. Shoot, like, let's pull it. You know, like, he absolutely, like, did the right thing when it comes to that creative process, and it sucks that like he would be, you know, reamed for it. Man. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't see him on Twitter, so.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, there's definitely been a lot of talk about sexism in comics recently, J. Scott Campbell also kind of like got a lot of flack. He commented on the Wonder Woman costume, the new Wonder Woman costume.
Oh, the new one where it has like the armor and everything?
Yeah, it has like the shoulder armor, and he was like, I think women look better without the shoulder armor, you know, and he was just kind of like talking about how, essentially talking about like why he draws women the way that he draws. And I know that a lot of people don't like the way that he draws because a lot of his women are kind of portrayed as a little bit more sex kitten than.
Was he the one whom, and I hope I'm not misquoting him, but I know there was someone who basically had, you know, said that I guess he didn't like it because I guess it wasn't sexy enough. Was that, I don't know, there was somebody who...
It might have been interpreted that way. I think he kind of said it like, hey, like, women don't really look good in shoulder pads, and it's because it kind of, like, takes their femininity away. And I think some women were upset about that because they were like, we should just draw... Like, it's okay to draw Wonder Woman as, like, a warrior. Like, it kind of escalated from nothing. Like, it was such a, I don't know, it was just weird. But he's gotten a lot of flack recently for, you know, just drawing women a little bit more sexy than people are comfortable with. Okay, no, Raphael Albuquerque is still on Twitter. Okay, I just found it.
Okay. Now, I guess let me ask you this then. Because, again, I know, obviously, being an artist yourself, I know there was a lot of discussion online, of course, with everything going on. Is it, because I know that some feel that it's really up to the consumer to then figure out whether or not they want to, I guess, patronize this art or what have you. But, I don't know, do you think, just playing devil's advocate, do you think there's an issue where... You could say that maybe it's not necessarily, you know, because like each artist has their own style. So can you, I guess, then at that point, I mean, obviously if he's making statements that might be a little unfortunate, but can you really then just go after an artist because of a particular way they draw?
I don't know. I think it's definitely a hard question to answer because, you know, each circumstance is going to be different. I absolutely think that... That there are artists out there who are definitely sexist in their drawings. And I'm not saying sexist, like in the obvious way, but like a lot of artists will draw, kind of like sex pot characters. And it seems very obvious to me that they're just like fulfilling their male fantasy of like drawing this woman this way. And what I was saying with people voting with their money is that I hope people will vote with their money and that will change the way that the industry makes comics. But I would definitely like to see artists be a little bit more thoughtful about how they draw men and how they draw women and be a little bit more thoughtful about whether or not they actually are drawing their female characters like those sexy characters. There's nothing wrong with a sexy character, and that's where you kind of come into the issue. But I think a lot of times, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? It's hard to...
Right. It's very interesting, and I guess this is like, I don't mean to necessarily put you on the spot, though, but I guess this is something that, in turn, I'm kind of struggling with myself, because... As someone who, I guess, who writes, I mean, granted, I don't draw, you know, it is kind of a bummer where, honestly, you do have a responsibility, but at the same time, I guess it's like, well, we're drawing a line from expression to then also becoming very, I guess, hurtful, for lack of a better term. So there's definitely a weird line there that it's going to be interesting to see where this comes, you know, from here on in, because obviously, with the, let's say, the Raphael Albuquerque thing, he, and I guess, figured, well, you know what, this... You know, you don't want it to necessarily make it a problem more than I guess they figured it already was, so they pulled it. Because I know there are some who argued that, you know, oh, they were stifling, you know, expression and things like that. So, I don't know. At one point, I guess in a lot of scenarios, there's someone who's going to be, I guess, disappointed by the outcome. But, wow, it's going to be pretty interesting going in.
Yeah, and I think DC kind of has a little bit more to lose, you know, when something like that happens.
Yeah, they haven't had a very good track record. I know there's been a lot of flack, and it seems like it comes from a lot from their end. I mean, I know Marvel has their share, too. Especially, I know there was the whole issue with the Spider-Woman cover, you know, several months ago.
I don't necessarily know about that one. But yeah, it's, I think that the reason why they pulled it is not because, I mean, the sexy characters, they will always exist. They're never going to go away. You know, we aren't going to like wake up one morning and like, there are no more sexy female characters being written or drawn. Like it's never going to happen. I think what the public, or at least what females are really asking for is just to be a little bit more thoughtful and not treat their female characters like they're kind of just objects.
Right.
And I think,
which is probably a better way to phrase
it. Yeah,
that.
I think the reason why DC pulled it, and I totally agree with it, is just because it was very, like, it reminded women of sexual violence, which is definitely different than a sexy character. I mean, on the scale, like, sexual violence towards women is, like, the high of the bad scale. And I think if it was just a sexy character, I mean, I don't think that women really would have freaked out about it the way that they did. It was like so incredibly, you know, uncomfortable, because of the connotations that it had. So, I don't know. I mean, long story short, the sexy characters will always exist, and there isn't necessarily anything wrong with that. But I think the reason why it's hard to put up with is because a lot of characters are sexy and they're very one-dimensional at the same time.
Yeah.
So if they were multi-dimensional, you know, but still had that sexiness, I think we've hit a good spot. Because it's either, you know, female characters are like the sidekick or the love interest, or they're described as a strong female character, and the word strong is like the only word to describe them, when really, you know, when you think about Superman and you think about Batman, they are strong, but there are many other adjectives that you can use to describe them, you know, because they're so multidimensional. We've seen a lot of sides to them, so
which it's funny when you said strong female characters, you ever, I don't know if you ever who was it? It was Kate Beaton, and who else was it? Was it Meredith Grand, where they had that series of comics, the strong female characters, kind of as a satire of those tropes?
No, I haven't seen that. Who was it?
Kate Beaton. I know she's an artist. She did, I know the most known for, what was the webcomic? Hark a Vagrant? You know what? I'll have to send it to you when we're done with the show, because I think you'll get a kick out of it, because it's a really nice send-up of those tropes.
Yeah, I would really like to see that. I know that Joss Whedon once was asked, you know, why do you continue, like, why do you write strong female characters as your leads? And he said, because you're still asking that question.
oh, yeah, I remember that.
So, it was such a great answer. Gosh, it was so great. I just love Joss Whedon, so it was really great to see that conversation.
Shoot. Now you mentioned Whedon, I'm like, well, crap, we'll have to have you back on to talk more Joss Whedon stuff.
Oh, no, we've opened up a can of worms, yep.
I know, like, I have such this awesome love-hate with him, because it's like, I love you because you write some amazing stuff, and it's like, I hate you because you kill off people, like...
He kills all of your favorite characters, all of them. Wash? Why did Wash have to die? What was the purpose of this?
I don't know, I'm still... That movie came out, what, 10 years ago
I'm still
now?
Upset about it.
I'm still angry, as if somewhere an answer's going to be provided for me.
Yeah, I recently bought this thing to go over my license plate. This says Wash as my co-pilot. Because I'm still upset about it.
You know what it was? It's such a, and I feel like, I'm sorry, like, I feel like we're running over time, but you know what? This needs to be addressed. Okay. Screw it. I feel like he died such an unceremonious death. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, let's see, in a story where a character's, you know, dying, maybe, like, you know, sacrificing themselves to save somebody. You know, he pulls off this amazing aerial maneuver, saves everybody. And right, everything's happening. But all of a sudden, whoop, spike to the chest. I'm like, wait, where'd that come from? No, that did not have to happen.
Right, and that's why it feels so pointless, is because, like, his death feels like it was for naught. You know, like, they didn't get something from his death. He didn't, like, sacrifice himself so that something could happen. It was really just, like, a horrible, stupid accident.
Right, like, for instance, if he was, you know, during the shootout, you know, just a couple of scenes later with the Reavers, or, you know, maybe there, or he leaves himself behind, or he goes to try to save Zoe's life, which would make a lot more sense and be a lot more symbolic that way, but nope, it's just a spike to the chest, like, it's just whatever. And I think that's really what it is. It's not so much the fact that he died, I think it's how he died.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a reminder to us from Joss Whedon, where he's like, yep, I can do whatever the fuck I want. Like, I don't have to do anything you guys think I'm going to do. Maybe that was it, or I don't know. It's
like, I'm still reconciling, you know, Buffy's mom's death, and that one was another, like, just weird one.
Oh, yeah. Paul hates that Anya died. He hates it. Anya from Buffy. And I know that, like, she wasn't really, like, a main character, which is probably why she was a little bit expendable, but, like, she was his favorite. And it's, yeah, it's just, like, a total bummer. You know. And he brought Spike back, you know, for no good reason.
Yeah, I know. Part of me never did get my Faith spinoff series.
Yeah.
I had a massive crush. And not even necessarily Eliza Dushku, but just Eliza Dushku as Faith herself. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, no, she was amazing. She was definitely like, ugh, Faith is here. Ugh. Like, it's Eliza Dushku's character as Faith was really tough to, like, swallow, because she was just so abrasive and, like, in your face. I kind of liked that about her a little bit, but I also...
Yeah, it was so over the top, but I think that's kind of what sold it for me.
Yeah, fair enough. I loved Dollhouse. I actually thought, as much as I like Eliza Dushku, I thought she was probably the worst part of that show. because, like,
I haven't really got into Dollhouse much. I need to revisit
you
that.
You do, because... Okay, so the thing about Dollhouse is that, like, it was... Was it 2 seasons or 3 seasons?
I think it was only about 2. I could be wrong. Don't quote me.
Okay. Well, whatever. It's kind of one of those shows where you knew. Like, I know that if Joss Whedon had 5 or 6 seasons of that show, it would have been the most amazing show of all time. But he was...
Absolutely.
You could definitely tell that he was rushed. You know? Like, he was rushed in his ending, and so he couldn't deliver it the way that he wanted to, but gosh, it would have been so beautiful. Victor and Sierra, man. Victor and Sierra forever. Whatever. Okay.
Damn it. See, if I knew you were that big a Joss Whedon fan, I would have started with that. I should have just asked you, like, all right, who do you love more than anybody else? Because now, like, it might have to be like a 2-part episode, or I know I might just have to have you back on. I know.
It's totally nerve, fine. Right? Do you ever do ones with, like, multiple people where it's, like, you know, 3 or 4 people?
Yeah. I mean, I can, the more the merrier. Anyone you want to bring on, like, I'm willing to chat with anybody. I know that makes it sound terribly desperate, but I just have such a huge kick out of just, you know, having people on just talking shop. Why? Who do you have in mind?
I don't think it sounds desperate. I think if you just sound like, cool, yeah, whatever. Like, let's just talk about it.
And especially if one of those people is Joss Whedon, I mean, sure, as...
Yeah, I'll find him on Twitter and be like, hey, Joss, can you call my podcast on my friend's podcast? Yeah,
it'll be 2 hours of us trying to figure out why the hell he killed Wash.
The funny part is, I actually think that, like, he might go on somebody's podcast at some point. Like, that might work once. You're like, hey, Joss, like, there's this podcast that I'm on. Like, do you want to go on it? And he'll be like, yeah, I'm not doing anything on Saturday. Sure. Like, I don't know. I feel like it could happen at least once to somebody.
All right, let's get this done. Okay. You're my muse at this point. I'm trusting you on this one. Go for
it. I'll send him all sorts of weird emails and...
Or just have Joss Whedon basically, like, I guess, option a script for a Flat Track Furies movie.
Oh my gosh. Here, yes, this is what needs to happen. I need to get so successful that I can ask Joss Whedon to do things and he'll do them.
Yeah, because I'm already in my head trying to figure out the cast for this movie, and this is sad that it's got to that point where, like, I read comics and I'm trying to figure out who would play this character if they decided to option this, because, you know, every book's getting picked up now.
We play this game all the time. Yeah.
So why? Do you actually have a dream cast for your book?
You know, I actually haven't really thought about my comic book too much in terms of, I mean, like, my dream would be if Flat Track Furies got picked up for, like, Saturday morning cartoons or something. You know, some sort of, like, kid show. But, yeah, I try not to think about my comic book in terms of a movie because I don't want anything else to pollute it. And also, that will actually convince me that one day it will get made into a movie. And when that doesn't happen, I'll be devastated. So I'm not gonna.
That's actually a really interesting way to look at it. Good point.
Yeah. I will say that that when I think of the unblinkable Molly Brown, the main girl with the braids, I usually think of Amber Heard. Do you know who she is?
Yes. I know she was in tons of stuff. I for some reason, all I can think of is Pineapple Express.
Oh, she was in Pineapple Express?
Yeah, she played Seth Rogen's girlfriend. I know she's been in more stuff than that, but name association.
She was in, probably her most famous one is The Rum Diary. She was the lady.
That's right, the Johnny Depp movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that how they met? I think that's actually how they met.
Yeah, I think so.
Through that movie.
Yeah. And then she was in, like, a bunch of horrible movies. That
yeah. Awesome. It's...
like Never Back Down. That's the worst movie I've ever seen. And
Are those like that? The tournament fighting movie.
Yeah, and I've seen it. I've seen it like 10 times. It's so bad. I don't know why I keep watching it.
It's just like a modern take on what was the movies back in the '80s with Eric Roberts, Best of the Best.
With Eric Roberts.
Yeah, was it Best of the Best? Like there was just like obviously in the '80s, you know, after like you know Bloodsport, there was all those movies of like. Just dudes like bare knuckle brawling in like parking lots or in arenas.
Best
of the Best. And I felt like never.
Yeah, martial artsy. Yep, Eric Roberts.
I feel like Never Back Down was just kind of like the modern version of that movie.
Oh my gosh. And it was so like, it was just terrible. There's so many things about it. But like, I really like terrible movies. So like the Fast and the Furious franchise, they're so bad. They're so bad. And I
no, those are like my favorite series. No, no one's allowed to talk bad about the Fast and the Furious, all right?
Yeah, I love them. I love that series, and like it's I'm almost like ashamed about it.
No, I think more people should just express their love because you know what it is? It's the best comic book movie without any superpowers whatsoever.
It's the best comic book movie without an actual comic book.
Yeah, like it's. Like, I got the same weird jitters seeing the trailer for Furious 7 than I did for, like, Age of Ultron. I'm like, the fact that they're at that same level is a little sad for me, but I couldn't help
it. Oh, my gosh, Adrian, he drives from one skyscraper to another skyscraper.
That's how is anyone not excited
about
this?
Oh, my gosh, because, it's like, I don't know. Like, the first movie is, like, not a lot of cool car stuff. I mean, like, it is, no. But it's, like... You know, it's about, like, driving cars really fast and, like, good driving and they, like, steal to get by and, like, I don't know. And, like, now it's just kind of, like, every movie has one-upped so that it's like a heist. It's, like, heist movies. It, like, originally started as car movies and now it's, like, heist movies.
Right. They just happen to have cars in them. And the fact that there's been 7 of them and they're still doing well, like, that's... Outside of a horror movie, that's very unheard of, I think.
It was like the biggest fluke of all time, right? Because the first one came out and like everybody loved it. The second one came out and it did okay. And then they did the third one, which nobody watched because it was...
Hey, I actually like that one a lot.
Well, Han is my favorite character. So I will watch the third one. But I kind of wanted to like forget that it ever existed a little bit. And then, but, like, the third one didn't do well at all. And then they were like, let's make a fourth one, like, 5 years after the fact. And for some reason, it did super awesome.
You know what I think actually helped them a lot? I mean, I have no backing on this, but I remember seeing a Tokyo Drift in theaters. And I remember a lot of people kind of really overly dislike in the movie, but you could tell no one was really interested in what's going on.
Okay.
That last shot, I can't remember the name of the kid.
The Luke kid?
Yeah, Luke kid. Like, the minute he pulls up and Vin Diesel pulls up next to him, the whole theater just went nuts. Like, you would have thought that he was actually in the theater, too, and everybody's like, oh, shoot, it's Vin Diesel in the muscle car, and I think, for some reason, that convince the people, like, well, you want to see more of these, but you gotta put Vin Diesel back in it.
Yeah, that's so weird, because, yeah, the whole movie is like, I can't believe I'm watching, like, this kid with this terrible southern accent, like, you know.
The worst part is, that's actually his accent.
Really? Oh, man.
You remember Sling Blade?
What?
You ever see Sling Blade?
No.
But the little kid in that movie, that's him. Like, that's actually, like...
Okay, I'll look it up.
What the heck is his name? Lucas Black, I think is his name?
Yeah, Lucas Black. And, like, yeah, when...
Like, he's real deep south. Like, it's pretty terrible how crazy south he is.
It's nuts how, like, Vin Diesel rolls up into that muscle car, and he says, like, Han was never into America, or, like, you know, he's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm Han's friend, and he's like... I don't know, Han liked American Muscle, and then Vin Diesel, with his deep, perfect angel voice, is like, he was when he was rolling with me, and you were like, oh my gosh! Like,
it's like, oh shit, like...
Gosh, I do...
Okay, yeah. You know what's gonna have to happen now? What? You do plan on seeing that in theaters, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm gonna make Paul... Take me. Absolutely.
I was going to say, when you do, like, you want to come back on a show and review it?
Yes. Okay. Yep. I'll watch...
I'm going to write this down.
I'll watch 1 through 6 in preparation, because I own all...
Ooh, good call. I'm going to have to do the same thing.
Yeah, and then...
All right, when does that come out?
I have it in my calendar. Hang on.
You have it on your calendar. That's amazing.
I know. I have, like, Fast and Furious 7 comes out today. Let's see. Is it just called Fast 7, or is it, like, Fast and Furious 7?
It's, like, Furious 7. Something weird. Like, they'll just take bits and pieces of the other title, because it's, like, Fast...
Yeah, that's why it's so confusing, is because they take... Yeah. Okay. It comes out on April 3rd.
Okay, that's right around the corner.
That is right around the corner. Yep, there it is. Fast and Furious 7 comes out. Okay.
So that's what I'm gonna do. I'll have to watch the other movies in preparation. And, I mean, obviously it doesn't have to be, like, right after the fact, but, you know, somewhere around there, we will have to reconvene and then review this movie, because knowing you're a big fan, I think you can probably enjoy it for what it's the ridiculous spectacle it's gonna be.
I'm actually really excited to see Ronda Rousey in it. Because she's...
Oh, she's in it?
Yeah, she's in it. And her and... Oh, shoot. What's the girl's name? Michelle Rodriguez, they fight in, like, prom dresses.
Why?
Yes. Best day ever.
Okay. All right. Now I really need to see this, because, I mean, Ronda Rousey is awesome in general, because it's, I mean, we could be here all day talking about her. You can't even call them fights, because normally fights are kind of, like, aren't one-sided, but I watched her documentary on cable the other day, and it's just like, wow, she's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, she's kind of like I know that some people think that she's, like, kind of mean, and I can understand why, because that's kind of like the culture of MMA, where you kind of, like, talk trash to, like, the other fighters and stuff. But I just think she's, like, fantastic, and she's probably, like, one of the most badass people, like, alive.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing this movie now.
Yeah, it's on.
Mariah, you've been absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for chatting with me. And again, we will have to reconvene and talk more weed and definitely Fast and the Furious, because I need to review this movie with somebody. So if you're down for it, I'm in.
I'm totally down for it. Yeah, thanks for having me, Adrian.
No problem. And, well, before you go, obviously I'm all about the shameless promotion. Where can the good people find you on the interwebs?
So the best place to find my comic is just flattrackfurious.com. You can find me on Twitter at Mariah Pariah, and that's spelled MoriahPariah. And you can also like Flat Track Furious on Facebook as well.
Awesome. And that will do it for Adrian Has Issues. And we will see you next issue.